Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 80.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, and welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks for making your way here, of course, for checking out the series. Please do hit that subscribe button. That way you get new interviews just like this one sent your way every single week. You can find us at Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And please do give the series a rating and leave a review while you're at it. We've had some great guests drop by, including Hamilton Lighthouser, Damon Auburn of Blur and Gorillaz, Adrian Ballou from David Bowie's band King Crimson, Daniel Ash from Love and Rockets, director Ash Avildsen and actress Emily Bett Rickards were here to talk about the movie Queen of the Ring. Talked with Denise Richards about her new reality show, Denise Richards and Her Wild Things, as well as Drop Dead Gorgeous and James Bond's The World Is Not Enough. We also talked with Simple Minds, the cast of Mythic Quest, Jason Isbell, Taj Mahal, Foo Fighters. That's just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, it's a special Rewind episode. In fact, it's a double feature. Talib Kweli and Peaches, two artists who couldn't be more different on paper, yet both built careers on defying expectations. Talib Kweli, one of hip-hop's sharpest lyricists. He spent decades balancing conscious rap with undeniable flow from Black Star to his solo greatness. Meanwhile, Peaches took electro clash, punk attitude, and pure sexual liberation and turned it into a movement, proving that provocation can be just as powerful as poetry. We're going to start with my conversation with Talib Kweli, though. This comes from 2015. He stopped into the WFPK studios while he was in town for the Forecastle Festival, at that time promoting Volume 1 of his B-side series. We got to talk about hip-hop's roots in combining activism and fun. We talked about J. Cole and Kendrick Lamar, Pitchfork, the entitlement of fans and their relationship with the artist, and so much more. So this is part one of today's Rewind. It's Kyle Meredith with Talib Kweli. I figured I should say, given everything that you are really known for, welcome to Kentucky, home of Rand Paul and Mitch McConnell.
Hey, man, you know, those are very popular guys.
Yeah, they are popular, unfortunately, I think for all the wrong reasons.
They are popular guys.
You know, we're in one of those towns. I don't know what you'd say. You know, you always hear Austin is not Texas. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to say that Louisville is not Kentucky, and for all that is representative of it.
Now, Kay was just explaining how impressed she was with Louisville.
Yeah?
Louisville.
Yeah, you'll get it. It's all right.
Louisville.
I do love the town. We've done some good stuff, but You got to put up with a bunch of other stuff when you...
Hey, man, you got Rand Paul. Isn't he like... He's like a dentist, right? And that's Ron Paul, right?
Yeah, no.
The Rand is a dentist.
Yeah,
right?
He was a dentist. You
I need
know.
To go see him about my teeth. Rand Paul, I need to go come see you about my teeth, yo. What's good?
Just don't go see him about your politics.
Hey, man, he's into legalizing pot, man.
Yeah, but he's also
into a political tactic. He's trying to get the pot vote.
That's right. You think it'll follow? You think everybody be like, yeah, it's the one thing we care about, so we'll get now, right behind you.
Shout out to the homie Cory Booker, definitely.
but it is. I guess at this point, you know, it is what you're kind of known for besides the music. It is the political side. Do you ever get to a point where you wish people would concentrate more on the music or, you know, is it about using your voice to push those things out there?
Yeah, I mean, what I do is I make music for a living. I'm an entertainer for a living. Mm-hmm. So I'm always impressed when I do an interview and somebody wants to talk about the music.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm not a shut up and sing type of artist. And hip hop in particular is informed by the struggle. A lot of people don't know that about hip hop because they only listen to commercial hip hop and they only have a very fleeting relationship with hip hop. But if you understand where hip hop comes from and the rudiments of it, you understand that as much as we like to turn up in the clubs, the hip hop come from social struggle and it come from speaking out. You know, Afrika Bambaataa and them, when they started hip hop back in the days, you know, they were talking about peace, love, unity, and having fun. And yeah. You can't leave out the having fun, but you can't leave out the peace, love, and unity either. And those guys was gangsters, man, but they understood that being gangsters wasn't good for the community. So they used hip hop to replace the gangsterism.
Yeah, that was the whole thing about how the Ghetto Brothers started, right? It was all about kind of the activism and then putting that in to the music to kind of get it out there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, hip-hop comes from Negro spirituals. It comes from Psalms in the Bible. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, more recently, it comes from Nikki Giovanni and Sonia Sanchez and Jane Cortez and The Last Poets and Gil Scott-Heron and putting message into music and using your oratory skills. Hip-hop is very loquacious. Mm-hmm. You can fit a lot of words into a hip-hop song. So if you can fit a lot of words, you don't want to just be talking a bunch of nonsense.
It's also a good time, I guess, for socially conscious rap. I mean, you've got two huge names that are doing big things with D'Angelo and Kendrick Lamar. Like, and it feels like to me it's really given the opportunity to kind of take that stuff and I don't know if I want to say shove it down people's throats because it almost seems like they're taking it without even realizing what they're getting.
Yeah, what's interesting right now with the music business is at a place where people are turned off by mass marketing and they appreciate things that are marketed in a niche way and things that are marketed directly. People are more interested in discovering things on their own than they are by some big marketing campaign. And so when they discover things on their own, they discover things that are more genuine and more sincere and things that they relate to more. And so when you have an artist like Kendrick Lamar, an artist like J. Cole, these are the biggest rappers in the business. Mm-hmm. Say what you want to say about whoever's turning up in the club right now. Ain't none of them outselling J. Cole. You know what I'm saying? J. Cole and Taylor Swift were the only platinum artists in the whole industry last year. Mm. And it's because of the sincerity and how genuine they're coming as artists. And that's what the people are relating to. Mm. So even though J. Cole and sometimes Kendrick can have big radio records, it's not the big radio records that are blowing them up. It's right. The more conscious records and the more introspective records that people are relating to.
Do you think it's a generational thing or you think it's just the time and the music that's kind of, again, helping it?
I think it's everything. It's the generational thing. It's technology. It's where the music business is at. It's where the fans are. It's where the consumers are, where the musicians are. The connection between the consumers and the fans and the musicians is shifting and bending at all times. And the savvy consumer and the savvy musician is driving the industry right now.
Yeah. And you're figuring out your own ways to get it out there. I mean, you've gone through... You know, when you started, it was very much the old school way of music, and to what you've been able to do, whether it's experimenting or with your new B-sides record, and you know, surprise,
right?
Here's a record.
Yeah, it's crazy because you know you have places, you know, outlets that I know these people at Fader and Complex and Pitchfork. And places like this that are now like looked at as the hallowed ground of music critique. And, you know, I put out incredible records, Prisoner Conscious, Gravitas, that I personally feel like are very good. And there was a lot of marketing and lead up to those records and a lot of dollars spent to get you to pay attention, a lot of videos and all that. And none of those blogs covered any of those records. Yeah. But I drop an album out the blue and I say it's featuring Kanye West, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, they clickbait. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, yeah, I'm totally down with quality. Yeah, definitely. We love this. But I see through that, and you know, shout out to all the blogs that are looking for clickbait so they can get hits on their blog, because we're all in it together, and it's a symbiotic relationship.
I want to say, though, it's not because of Kanye, you know.
No, it definitely is. You're not interviewing me because of Kanye, but Pitchfork picked up my album because of Kanye, without a doubt. I hope Pitchfork is listening to your program here.
Maybe they will be. And we'll be right back right after this.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes, Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service, real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Talib Kweli. Well, you've got this new B-Sides album out.
Right, and Pitchfork did a... Let's talk about Pitchfork for a second. They did an article talking about Lauryn Hill owes us nothing. I'm like, I wrote that article a year ago. Y'all late, man. Stop biting, Pitchfork. Pitchfork, stop biting.
You're the clickbait for them. Vice versa.
I'm the clickbait for them, but they don't want to review none of my albums, yo. Because they soft.
It's going to be a weird number that's not going to mean anything.
Right, because they soft.
What does a 6.3 mean? What is a...
That means that someone's pretentious and someone wears diapers. And they should have no business reviewing music because they've lived no life experience. Your opinion has no value.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. I mean, critiquing is weird anyway. And, right. And I'm on the critical side to a point, I guess. But it's just a complete eye roll inducing.
Oh, no, I mean, I critique music. I mean, you know, music lovers should critique music and hold musicians accountable and all that. And this and that. And that. It's great. I mean, I love reading. But, you know, I come from a generation where, you know, music critics, you had to be involved in the culture. You had to be participating in the culture. Culture. And too often these bloggers don't participate in the culture. It's too easy to think that your opinion is worth something without participating in the culture these days.
Yeah. It's funny. I actually have a note on my computer that says, should artists be held accountable for their art? Because, and you say yes. You know,
well,
as a fan.
I think human beings should be held accountable for things. We're humans and we're mothers and fathers and community people and teachers before we are artists.
Yeah.
So we have to be artists' only job is to be honest. That's it.
That's what I'm saying. So as a fan, though, you know, there's one point that I shouldn't have a say in it. I shouldn't have a say in what you do. You do it, and I can decide if I like it or not.
Right.
But on the other side, if I'm a fan, of course I'm going to complain, even if I do like it half the time. You know.
No, and as a fan, you should complain. You have the right to complain. But a lot of times, as fans, because I'm a fan too, mm-hmm. We don't understand the relationship and the exchange. You know. We as fans in this internet age, in this digital age, we feel entitled. We feel like music should be free, and everybody owes us something. And now, see, back in the days, if you were like into like, you know, like, if you were a fan of MC5, mm-hmm. you couldn't just say you were a fan of MC5. Someone would call your bluff. You would have to have a bootleg or have been to a show or right. own a record. You'd have to have some sort of. Now someone could. Listen to your Pandora station for a couple of minutes or have seen a video on YouTube for free. and then they'll come up to you talking about, I'm a fan, and they'll treat you like you owe them something. It's like, no, you haven't invested anything. Yeah. You heard my song on Spotify, and you're my biggest fan? No, you're not. I know my biggest fan. My biggest fan is on Quali Club. He bought everything on Quali Club. I know him by name. I can email him and call him right now. You are not my biggest fan, and you don't deserve to say that. You know, because you've heard of me? Because, you know, Kanye said my name? Like, you don't deserve to say that. But again, the responsibility is not on the fan. It's on me. It's on me to make that fan care. You know what I'm saying? But I love exposing fake fans.
You do it on Twitter. I've noticed.
I love it. I do. I love it. I love being able to challenge fans to hold them accountable. You know why? Because they're going to hold me accountable.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
They're going to come to me, and they're going to challenge me, and they're going to hold me accountable, and I'm going to flip it on them.
And they will not expect it. That's the last thing you expect from hero, whatever.
That's not even a picture of you. That's not even you in that picture, son. Why, your opinion means nothing.
All right. Let's talk about this music, because I did promise you we were going to talk about the music.
Yes.
Train of Thoughts? That's the name of it, right?
Sort of.
So it's B-sides and
yes.
Volume 1.
Yes.
And the whole deal. Do you look at these as, I always saw B-sides records like Lost Dogs. These are the dogs that didn't get a home.
Sort of. You know, B-side and hip-hop is a little different. The hip-hop B-side traditionally has been the better record. You know, the B-side of Big Papa was Warning by Biggie. You know what I'm saying? Like, the B-side of you know, One More Chance was Who Shot You. You know, I'm not, that might not be quite accurate,
yeah,
but you get my point. In hip hop, it's the B-side that people always check for. I got a lot of records. I put out a lot of mixtapes. I've always been ahead of the curve and ahead of my time. And there's a lot of records. I got records with Killer Mike, you know, records with Fabulous, records with Kanye, records with Mos Def, Common, and records that when I put them out, they were ahead of their time. People didn't really get what I was trying to do. Now these artists have blown up way more.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting all these records, and I'm like, yo, my kids deserve to eat off these records. You know what I'm saying? So I put them out.
That's going to be frustrating a little bit, you know, doing that time and time again, where you do it. You find something, you kindle something, and it blows up, and here you are.
No,
like,
it's not frustrating at all. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. I just have to learn how to be smarter with it. It's like, you know, I did that with, like, you know, I did records with a lot of artists that they blew up later. I did a record for Prisoner Conscious with Kendrick Lamar. Mm-hmm. We recorded the record in maybe 2011, 2012. But I was like, this dude, they're not ready for him yet. They will be in a couple years. So I held that record. I learned. By the time I got to doing records with Kendrick, I learned. And I held the record until after he dropped his first single.
Is there a lot more? You've got a lot more beyond this, but beyond Volume 1, what we're hearing right now?
Yeah, for that, I got at least 2 or 3 volumes.
Yeah.
I'm putting out a free mixtape in a couple of weeks called, can I curse?
Yeah, sure.
It's called Fuck the Money.
Yeah.
This record is featuring Miguel and Styles P, and who else is on this record? Nico Is, and Casper Neuset from South Africa. Mm-hmm. But this record is very exciting for me, this Fuck the Money record. I had to get out. Fuck the Money is really more new sounding, newer sounds in hip hop, which is why I put out the B-sides, the rarities first, because I wanted to get that out of my system.
Here's, clean it, right.
Yeah, here's what you're used to hearing from me, and now I have a new sound.
With your songs, and looking at some of these B-sides and everything, if it's a topical song that was very much of the time, and if you're talking about a specific event, do you tend to try to stay away from that? Does that become so ingrained in that moment that it doesn't make sense for you now?
Well, that's the challenge with doing topical music and conscious music and music that speaks directly to the movement. Luckily for hip-hop has always spoken directly in the language that the people in the streets still speak. I was watching Nina Simone's documentary on Netflix.
Great documentary.
Yeah, it's great. And she talks specifically about this question. Mm-hmm. She talks about doing protest music and how she couldn't perform those songs anymore because they didn't feel timely.
Yeah.
But I think that was more her speaking to her disdain with the industry. I think she felt hurt by the fact that the industry blackballed her and that she wasn't supported by doing that music. It's not so much that those records and those themes no longer resonate, because they do. Mm-hmm. Nina Simone, we think that's a great documentary specifically because those themes and those protest songs still resonate.
Still, yeah, right.
But she couldn't see that at a time when the world wasn't appreciating her. Mm-hmm. You know, she's gone. She's not going to get to see this documentary. You know, sometimes we celebrate our heroes after they're gone.
Yeah. That's the most unfortunate and surprising thing about protest songs is, you know, the ones written for the 60s, they still make sense.
They do.
And I would think if you're the artist who wrote the protest song, you're hoping that this isn't going to make sense in 5 years.
Yeah, you're hoping that it changes and something does better. Something it makes something better. But hip-hop, you know, is great because this is a great thing about hip-hop is that that's my challenge. How do I talk about, you know, Tamir Rice and Eric Garner and this new situation in Texas, Sandra Brand? You know, how do I talk about these things? But it's about understanding history and understanding that everything has a context. Yeah. Understanding that what Malcolm X was talking about, what Assata Shakur was talking about, is very, very relevant. And bringing a younger generation into the mind state where they can even see the connection.
I can't wait to hear what you've done on this next record. I have a feeling all that you just said is somehow going to creep into it, too.
Some of it.
Yeah. All right. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you so much, man.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith. All right. Part two for today's Rewind. And this one takes us back to 2016 South by Southwest in Austin, Texas, when I found myself at a table across from Peaches for a really great and a memorable moment. We got to talk about the moment she decided to be a musician and the environment that led to her making that jump. We also got to go back to being a teacher before picking up an acoustic guitar and landing a local gig that eventually gave her the bass to start a band, all that and a whole lot more. It's part two, this Rewind episode, Kyle Meredith with Peaches. Well, so you've already got the setup then. I mean, what we're looking at here is the pivot point for an artist when they decide to jump all in.
Yeah.
And become something.
Right.
And I mean, if you have that one specific moment, you can dive right into that. I don't know if you want to, you know, give a little background about even why you decided.
Well, I was doing music. I sort of fell into it, really. I wanted to be a theater director. And then I went to theater school and realized that I didn't want to work with actors and I didn't want to work with all these sets and thought that I'd probably have a heart attack by the time I was 30 if I continued that way. So I kind of dropped out of this director's program that I was in and then just took general different arts, you know, just to like creative, because obviously I was a creative. So this is in college. And then, which we don't call it that in Toronto, but I just said college. It's funny.
University of
University.
Yeah, yeah.
University. So, and then I finished school and I had a very boring job as a working in a daycare. I don't know if this is too much information,
no, no,
but take it whatever.
Yeah,
I worked in a daycare and it was so boring and the teachers were exhausted and there were way too many kids and they were all like, you know, 3 to 5 and they were just bored. And I was learning to play acoustic guitar, so I would bring my acoustic guitar to work and I'd start playing it. And then, you know, of course the kids would respond. And so I developed some sort of program where I would like tell stories and the kids would act them out, because that's what kids want to do when they're little. They want to role play. So the director of the daycare, you know, saw me doing that. It was like a YMCA. And she said, would you like to do this program at all the YMCAs in the area? So then I started to develop this program and I got a job doing that. And then I had this career teaching kids, and it grew and grew, and it was just me, and it was great because I didn't have to answer to anybody. But at the same time, I had a girlfriend at the time, and she was also playing acoustic guitar, and got one gig at a bar. She had like 5 songs written, and I had like 3, and I'm like, can we do it together? Can I join you? I asked her to join her, and we sang together at this bar. And then so many people came, because just we had a lot of friends, that he asked us if we could play there weekly. So all of a sudden I was a musician with a gig playing acoustic guitar, which I'd never done in, you know, really.
I mean, this is what so many people work so hard for.
Yeah,
and
no,
it
was
just
like,
kind of falls in for
well,
you.
Well, yeah, no, but it was like, you know, it was a small bar. It wasn't like, you know, but we were starting to get attention and in a certain community, and, you know, young girls would sneak in and they'd cry to our music and stuff. And, you know, but it wasn't really the kind of music I wanted to play. So, like, we did that for 1.5 years, you know, and we started getting other gigs too, but we always did this weekly gig. But I, like, crafted sort of, like, songwriting and things like that. But then that sort of gave me the bug to continue on. So then I quit that band and started to experiment with other bands. But they didn't really connect with an audience that much. You know, I had a band called Fancy Pants Hoodlum that I turned into Meryl Nisker, my own name, because it was basically mine. But you know, where I wanted to, like, expand using my voice more and just you know, experiment.
Right.
But people were like, a little bit like, what are you doing? Whatever, I didn't care. But I still had my job with the kids and everything.
So it was kind of safe in that regard. Like,
I guess
you were allowed to.
I didn't really think about. You know, it was just kind of like a hobby,
sure,
but
sure,
but
yeah,
a really a passion,
yeah.
a passion.
Right.
And then I met a band that actually liked what I did, and there was a girl in the band that I became good friends with. And I said I wanted to start a band with her. And this is a really long story, so take what you want from it, because it's going to go on and on and on. So I started...
You're doing all the work for me, by the way.
All right,
so
yeah, yeah, exactly. So I wanted to start a band with her, and I wanted to start an all-girl band. And she's like, no, but my next-door neighbor, he's really cool. He has a place to jam in his basement, so we should just go over there. And I have a crush on this guy, so we should invite him, too. So I was like, ugh, no, I want a girl band, but okay, I'll come to the jam. And I went there, and I've only ever played electric guitar and acoustic guitar. And there were those two guys, and we smoked huge joints. And we didn't say a word. I didn't say a word to them, because I was like, I want this to be an all-girl band. I'm like, you know. And we started jamming. There was, a really cool, like, SH-1000 keyboard there, and there was drums and a bass, of course, and a guitar and vocal mics. And I'd never played keyboards before. I thought they weren't cool for rock bands. That's what I thought. And we just started switching instruments. Like, I'd never played any of these things, and everybody was just so open to it. And we just started writing songs. We literally wrote, like, three songs just, like... about each other and about, like, little sexual tensions that were going around the room. And it was like, whoa, this is so cool. We're just like, fuck everything we've all done before. This is just like,
it
really
straight into it.
Yeah, very to the gut. And so we started a band, and we called it The Shit. And you know, we were kind of like a no way, for lack of a better room, but people really loved it. And then I was like, I kind of got the bug, or understood, like, wow, when you have a band or you have something that people love, like, even if it's underground, I don't mean like we are pop, we're going to make it huge, but I was like, this is, you know, really cool. And then I got thyroid cancer, and it didn't affect me, but it affected my brain. And I was like, I really want to make music. I want, you know, what is important to me. And I realized music is really important, and that's going to be what I do. So that was the moment where I was like, okay, let's do it. And then all the people in The Shit, well, I like to say The Shit turned to diarrhea, and then everybody else moved away, and I had to, and now I was like, you know, involved and interested in keyboards and drums and blah, blah, blah. So I got one machine, and I started to just make beats on it and make music like I was, a whole band. And, you know, also I was in a relationship, and that broke up. So the two things, a sort of really long relationship I was in and the thyroid cancer, really just drove. I was just like, that's it. That's all I need. That's what I'm going to be doing. This is my focus, you know? And, you know, because I had to, like, I had to start my life over when you have a long relationship, you know. So, and so I made Teachers of Peaches, which is obviously not a bleeding heart, victimized album at all.
This is 95, right?
No, this is 99.
Oh,
yeah,
right. Yeah,
99,
yeah,
when
right.
I was making
right.
it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was making these songs, and then it started to get, you know, I started to play around. I started to get some attention, and I was just very conscious of not saying, I'm having a bad breakup, and I had cancer. You know, I had nothing. I didn't want to be pigeonholed or anything like that. I just was like, you know, I didn't want any of those things to, like, you know what I mean? Like,
because sure, sure.
You can use those things.
But
I don't
want to define you at the same
I didn't want
thing,
to define
right.
me or like, she had this and this
right.
happened. So I never mentioned it. Actually, this is probably the second time I've ever mentioned it in an interview, I think. And this is like, you know, 16 years later.
Sure.
It wasn't like I was avoiding it. It was just like I didn't want it to be defining. So
because you want the music to stand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then, you know, I had traveled around with Gonzalez, who was part of the shit, in Europe, and we came to Berlin and played. We were just playing electronics with no vocals, and a small label saw us and said, "Oh, I'd love you to be part of this festival," which is outrageous. Like, you just go to Berlin and play at a weird underground club, and then they want you to play at this festival. But I had to go home because I still had my job as teaching kids, like, not at the daycares anymore, but I had a whole business. You know, this is like a 10-year, you know, story.
Right.
Put into, I don't know, 5 hours for you. And then so I went back, and that it's actually when I came back from that visit in Berlin, knowing that I was like, I am going to make this album. And then that's when I was like, this is the moment where I'm just going to do my thing. And I didn't really think, like, I'm going to be a superstar or I'm going to travel the world. I just thought, maybe I can go back to Berlin or play, but I really want to make a good album and I want to make music. So I produced everything and then played there and got signed by a very small label, and moved to Berlin after, you know, I finished my last year. Also very exciting, there was a girl I had met a long time ago who was also teaching kids who had a teen pregnancy. I thought it was very strong of her. She was teaching kids pregnant, 16, in front of other people, like, and I contacted her because I knew she was a great musician and a teacher, and I gave her my whole business. I'm like, do you want to teach kids music, and you want to do this? Here's all my contacts, take everything. I'm moving to Berlin, I'm gonna try it as, you know, Peaches. And she's just, so it was nice to pass that on too, you know. And
now was that moment right there very hard at all for you to be able to let go? I mean,
no, I was excited.
And I guess I should ask, like, financially and all of that stuff, were you able to just kind of walk away?
Well, you know, because I built up my business for 10 years, that was pretty good. I had saved some money, even though I didn't really care, you know. I've actually never really been like money or you know, sure. It's just kind of like...
But you got to make sure you can eat.
I got lucky that I had a job every day, and I actually, I'm not, it's just that I don't mind a hard work in the day and then hard work at night, you know, so... So I just got up and left. But I did stay in Toronto. You know, I made the album Peaches and Peaches in Toronto, where I'm from, and started a whole new life that year before I knew, you know, while I knew I wanted to go somewhere else. And I think that's very important, that I didn't just run away. I like, stayed there and created and saw that I could create a whole new life, even in your own city, if something, you know, happens to you, like a bad breakup, or, you know, because you really do have to start over. So I wasn't afraid of starting over again, like, you know.
Which is incredible. I mean, that is an incredible story.
Oh.
You know, with it.
Yeah.
So when did you realize then that it was working?
Well, once I got to, the minute I got to Berlin, I was getting, like, interest. You know, I was signed to the label, so no one could sign me, but I'd heard that Madonna liked my album. I heard that, like, the Beastie Boys thought it was cool, and I heard that, like, Arthur Baker, who did all those, like, freestyle cities, were, like, interested in it. So, you know, it just started, it went from there, and then I got, you know, just, like, people would contact me, like, hey, I like your stuff, and, you know, and making friends that way, just... Like, real friends, you know. And then I didn't take it all like, oh, I should capitalize on these opportunities. It was just cool. I was just like, great, and just doing my thing. And, you know, and it was fun, and you'd meet people, and, you know, you just keep doing my thing. And, you know, I've had ups and downs, right? You know, like, people loved me for that. And then my second album, which actually is Fatherfucker, people... So many people tell me that's the album for them, that where they really, you know, figured out who they were, their coming out album or whatever. But it got so, like, the critics are like, eh, whatever, you know. And then I was like, one trick pony, and a lot of people, you know, would have stopped. I just kept going. I think I just, longevity, and I just kept going. And
so there was never the point then that you actually thought, maybe this is going to crumble, maybe it's
did, you know, maybe it did, and I didn't even, like, notice. Yeah. I just kept going, you know, so...
I feel like one day I want to do a whole series on the Black Sheep record. That story right there, you know. Because I love so many of those records, too. Where you hear an artist go, oh, man, that was a failure. And it's like, that's my favorite record.
Yeah,
you know?
No, I there's some songs in there that I think it was just too much for a lot of people. You know, it's just... it was too queer for people, but you know, all that stuff that was too queer is now what's in the mainstream. So, you know, there's it's all getting talked about in the mainstream now. So you know, and that album is the first two albums also, like, if you think about, you know, this is also, we're not very, you know, the, if you think about all the pop star girls who turned from, like, girl to woman, like, around 10 years ago, so you have, like, Britney Spears, mm-hmm. Christina Aguilera, Avril Lavigne, Pink, they all cited me, like, on their way to womanhood as, like, an inspiration, like, Britney, you know, she loves that, you know, like, there was, like, she wants to write a song like Peaches. Christina Aguilera, when she was making Dirty, was listening to Fuck the Pain Away. That was her jam, you know. Avril Lavigne was more into, like, Fatherfucker. I'm the kind of bitch. She even did a little kind of, right. I'm the one that you want, like, a song pretty similar and stuff. Like, but would talk about how that was her favorite song. You know, it's that moment where they're going from girl to woman. Mm-hmm. So, and then, and Pink, I was actually on an album of hers doing a duet with her. So, it's amazing to think of those girls that, you know, were like primed to be all, you know, when pop music was still like, you gotta be fresh, sure. and cute, and then they would go into womanhood and be like, no, I'm into this, you know, so.
That's got to feel good.
I think that's a cool, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you have the next generations of, like, you know, Gaga and Miley Cyrus. It's just like normal now, you know.
Yeah. And there you were.
There, well, I was.
That's a perfect story.
Standing in the shadows.
And my thanks to Peaches and Talib Kweli. And, of course, thanks to you for checking out the episode. Before you get out of here, make sure to hit that subscribe button so you can get new interviews just like this one sent your way every single week. You can grab us Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or, again, anywhere you get your podcasts from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Please do give the series a rating. Leave a review while you're at it. After that, you can head over to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday starting 6 p.m. Eastern. It's 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music, bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. In fact, one of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from Portishead, The Cranberries, Rancid, The Selector, Nirvana, Benjamin Booker, The Killers, Lou Reed, Amy Mann, Catherine Will, Neutral Milk Hotel, Bonnie Prince, Billy, Ani DeFranco, Lucy Dacus, and my interview with Graham Coxon of the band Blur. That's what you can hear weeknights when you tune in 6 p.m. Eastern, WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes, Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service, real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.